This time on Amazingly Terrible, we are watching G.I. Joe, Episode 45, Excalibur.
And knowing is half the battle.
G.I. Joe!
You're listening to Amazingly Terrible, the podcast that ruins your childhood by ruining your present. My name's Adam.
My name's Dan.
I blew the. I had the bit part, and I fucking blew it.
Nice.
I was literally the skull in Hamlet. He was just supposed to talk at me, and I fucking did that. I was Yorick.
Yeah, you were the Yorick. Your jawbone just fell out mid-sentence.
Yeah, yeah. Clanged on the ground.
Ran around trying to go grab it. Put it back together. How was everybody's week this week?
Is this the bruv part of the show? I like this.
The bruv.
The bruv.
Yeah. This is the Marin part of the show. Gentlemen that run the Greatest Generation podcast called the Marin Open, in that we blindly call the Marin Open too, not knowing if that's a real thing or not.
It is. I mean, it's a real thing if it's on that other more successful podcast that we're stealing from.
You mean?
Because we're
Mark
afraid.
Marin or the Greatest Generation?
I mean, it is. Both. I mean, he did kind of perfect the form of Marin, you know?
Yeah.
But maybe we should look for other podcasts that we like appreciate little pieces of and start making that into our verbiage.
Ooh.
Well, why don't we just come up with new and original ideas?
Shut up.
Yeah. That's not how things get done in America. What are you talking about?
Yeah.
Are you even...
What are we, my bim bam?
Yeah. Jesus.
Hey, come on.
My favorite is Dungeons and Daddies, where like before they actually get to the podcast at all, they do like a little... like vignette from a movie that they repurposed with like information within the podcast itself. I think we can do something like that. You know?
Wow, that sounds intense.
Well, my point was going back to Adam's original question of how we're all doing. I think we should have more of these like bruv moments in the beginning of our podcast where we can talk about stuff.
You mean like feelings. Brotherly love? Like brotherly love? Is that what you mean?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Like a little Philadelphia moment.
I'm not hip to the lingo of these kids these days. So.
I just came up with it. I just combined brother and love to bruv. You know, so patent pending.
Get your new
TMTM.
Get your new bruv flavor of Blue Mountain Bean.
This is all gotta go. It's all gotta go.
Oh, yeah. I use some of it. So.
Cato.
Oh, that.
What?
That is all the stinger.
So maybe I should have watched the episode sooner. But then we wouldn't have these wonderful
these moments,
aha moments, where
these Marin opens,
where we tear open raw my childhood wounds on the air.
Oh, wow.
It really, Mike is the most vulnerable of all of us.
I was just watching the opening credits. I, you know, have gotten that far just now.
It's G.I. Joe against Cobra the enemy, fighting to save the day.
Beyond thinking that that's the lamest opening ever, I also remember thinking that this is what we were told. And I try to remember what kind of shaped my image. And G.I. Joe was one of those shows that was like indoctrinated into people like me and thinking that we're the good guys and we're off and we need to liberate the world and military good. And this was before 9/11 and this was before the Iraq war, I think. Mm-hmm. So
it was.
It was like the height of American optimism.
Jingoism.
Yeah. We talk about this a lot, but G.I. Joe really rings to me because it just seems so over the top, but we didn't think anything was weird about it. Like looking back now, we're like, oh my gosh, this is, you know, military industrial complex. But back then it was just like, yeah, G.I. Joe, who doesn't watch that?
Also, when we were watching this when we were kids, it was like, oh, wow, this is a diverse group of heroes that, like, have, like, their own individual personality kind of plugged into whatever it is that they're wearing. They get to choose their own outfit and design and whatnot. And, like, as an adult, we're going and looking at it, and they're like, this is the most racist group of heroes who are treating right. each other like the stereotype that they are. And they are, well, I guess they also are wearing different outfits, but in my mind, I'd be like, there's no fucking way any military would allow these people to wear this clothing at all.
To just run their around without a shirt on at all times?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, for Christ's sake, one guy doesn't even have shoes. Like, one of the main characters of this episode isn't even wearing shoes. So.
It's literally a bunch of people who have cosplayed into the military.
Exactly.
I like that, though. I think how
if
cool
our, if our military was like that, if it was just a bunch of cosplayers. Yeah. Yeah.
Think how amazing it would be. We'd be so intimidating. Mm-hmm. If everyone got to if everyone got to design their own uniform.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
What's on your uniform? Oh, I've got 5 grenades. Okay, but... You're going to have live ammunition? Oh, no, no, no. They're going to be dummy grenades. You're never going to see me use them. They're just going to be strapped to my body at all times.
No, no, you got to do like, this one is a smoke grenade. This one is a poison gas grenade.
That's right, that's right.
This one is a, this one emits a series of rainbow sparks.
My my thing, I use shuriken. This one creates a gas field.
Right.
This one is knockout gas. It disperses immediately so it doesn't affect me. This one is high explosives.
Yeah, that's good stuff.
And me, I'm going to carry a sword.
Yeah. You know you're a fighter pilot.
Yeah, give me the sword.
Saber.
That'd be amazing. Yeah, it'd be super rad.
Yeah. Mm.
A lot of them would just be dressed like Astartes Space Marines, like 8-foot-tall cosplay outfits.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Just made out of cardboard. You're walking around.
Right, right, right.
Yeah.
Speaking of bad openings, doesn't G.I. Joe have an awfully jingly sounding opening?
Oh, my gosh.
That doesn't fit the rest
Mike
of the
is
show?
Desperate for us to just get into the episode, isn't he?
Yeah.
Come on.
Well, it has been an hour.
Fine.
The opening has too many effects in it.
Way too many.
Way too many.
And the guy doing it needs to stop trying to accidentally invent rap.
Yeah. Yeah, nice.
He's doing that whole sing-talking thing that's not quite rap.
Yeah, and plus, like, mostly instead of fighting, they just throw each other. Yeah. Everybody throws another human.
Yep. The and good the guys way. Throw other good guys to go get other bad guys to throw the bad guys.
And then they catch them. They like throw them and catch them and throw them.
Yeah. Enemy in the middle. But and then there's the fight to the Death Star canyons.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yep. Yep.
And I love that the YMCA like part where they all just fly in and they're just like you're talking about. Everyone's got their own cosplay on.
Yeah. I also like that at a certain point in the overall opening, Flint and his crew of G.I. Joes, like, literally run out of a fiery explosion.
Yes. And they don't look back because they're that cool.
Well, it's not even that they don't look back. They were, like, within the flames.
Mm.
They were inside of the explosion, and they just run right through it.
So you're saying that their inside should have been liquefied, basically?
Well, they should have at least had some of that hatch mark, those hatch mark line drawings they do to show that you're a little injured.
Yeah.
On your chin.
See, this is the kind of show that, like, for our generation, was the anti-fascist, like, like G.I. Joe's fighting against these clearly Nazi-looking bad guys.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, and so you're like, oh, Nazi's bad.
It's World War II, but, you know, for kids.
Yeah, where they're, like, going around, you know. And
it's like the comic book version of World War II, where you have everybody is, like, a specialized commando of some type with specialized training. No two are the same.
Right.
And then they all have their own take on their own personal uniform.
Just like in World War II.
Yeah.
It's just not passed off as a World War II, like... show. It's like modern era, so you know it was supposed to be like for our generation, the new cool way to be against Nazis.
It was written, like, its lineage, it was written by some of the same writers at Marvel who had invented S.H.I.E.L.D. and HYDRA. Mm-hmm. So it's, like, strongly modeled. Yeah, which was basically a continuation of World War II.
Oh, yeah.
By other means, and a spy story, kind of. But it's pretty much the same. Like, S.H.I.E.L.D. is essentially G.I. Joe.
Yeah.
Hydra's Cobra.
Yeah.
Oh, they're both lizards.
Gentlemen, I think we've found
a mystery. If you pull off enough legs, yes, then they're both lizards.
Exactly. Interesting. That sounds painful. So when was this written? What, like, originally, was G.I. Joe 1950s?
Oh, yeah. Who's done the research?
Okay, yeah. All right. So let's get into the research.
Yes.
Excellent.
I'm just going to say, this is a big one. Like, this was G.I. Joe was huge for me, probably bigger than Transformers, and I think, like, huge as a media empire.
Yes. I'm actually picturing you pulling out, like, a giant binder with, like, multiple tabs in it and, like, saying,
no, I, like, there's more than you could, yeah, there's more than you can ever wade through. So I tried to, like, keep it focused on, like, the early history and the broad strokes of, like, the meat of what we remember as G.I. Joe. Nice, it was nice. Named after, so I heard a couple different things. It was named after General Issue or Government Issue Joe, which is kind of like a term that had sort of equated people to equipment. So there's like a level of irony there, I suppose.
See, I always thought that the GI stood for General Enlisted.
So there was that too. It was used to mean multiple different terms. So,
oh yeah,
military General Issue, acronyms, Government Issue.
Yeah,
General Enlisted. All of that. All of those terms were applied.
Well, except for Enlisted, which is spelled with an E.
That one wasn't applied.
Hmm.
Yeah.
I realized what I was saying, and I just went with it.
General information. General
Mills. General Electric.
General Iliad.
Yeah. General
Isis.
General Schwarzkopf. or what was it? General Schwartzman.
General Schwartzman.
General Schwartzman. So its development led to the coining of the term action figure.
Mm.
And it's a toss-up if this or Transformers is the prototype for the comic cartoon toy shell game. Like the chicken or egg shell game.
Yeah, I always thought it was this. I always thought this was the first one for that.
It's hard to know. They both were doing it, but I think this one did it more successfully or had better integration.
And it was action figures just because boys don't play with dolls, right?
Right.
Before this, there was only dolls.
Right. And it's been used as a toy line name for many different toy lines, but only really two big ones. Which the original, which is launched on February 2nd, 1964. And this was the 12-inch doll style.
Yeah, these are the big ones. Yeah.
Yeah, and they had clothes, and each one was supposed to represent a different branch of the armed services. So they had a sailor, a soldier, a pilot, a marine, and then later they also had a nurse.
Hmm.
And this was referred to Action Man this is referred to as the Action Man line, and it was relaunched in Europe later, and they continued to use the Action Man line name for a lot of the European G.I. Joe.
Okay.
Yeah, to make it less
American
jingoistic, I guess.
Yeah. Makes sense.
This line was relaunched in 1982, and these are the ones we remember. It was with a 3.75 inch figure and a line of vehicles. It was patterned to be the same size as the Kenner Star Wars line, but with more points of articulation.
Oh, so the Star Wars line came out before.
Yes.
Well, I guess it was 1982. Yeah.
Because that was the 70s. You know, they had those in the early 70s.
Yeah.
Not the early 70s.
Late 70s.
Late 70s. And this was called the Real American Hero line. And this had a complicated lore, which was that G.I. Joe fought Cobra, quote-unquote, the enemy.
Okay.
Which is a global terrorist organization bent on world domination. Unclear about how it's funded, though. It's really unclear how they're, you know, they seem to behave like a nation state. So this the combination of an ongoing comic and animation and a toy line was a new marketing tactic, as well as the end run around regulators that we knew was. And they originally developed the advertisements to advertise the comic book to prove that it was like a real comic book, but they also served as advertising for the toys.
Interesting.
And they very deliberately like released the toys first.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So they've made sing-along records, t-shirts, dozens of different comic lines, some that are still running.
Wait. Did you say sing-along records?
So, yeah, sing-along records.
What are some of the great songs that they put on these records for us to sing along with?
I have no clue. I really don't know. But your guess is it's probably the Mike's jingles, you know?
What about my jingles? You guys talking about my jingles behind my back?
We're talking about your jingle jangles,
Video games, backpacks, international toy line spinoffs, board games, model train sets, kites, and sheets. I had the model train set, the sheet, and I think I had a kite.
Nice. I had...
Oh, I had a t-shirt for sure, too.
I don't think I had any of that. I think I had a handful of the toys, like just the... Not even the vehicles, just like the G.I. Joes themselves. But my parents stopped buying those for me pretty quickly when I discovered you can actually, like, twist them apart.
Yeah. Yeah.
And snap the rubber bands.
Yeah, break the rubber bands.
That's right. I used to do that.
And then stick the firecracker on the inside and then close it back up and run away.
Nice. Nice. It was a gold mine for Hasbro, and multiple sources ranked it as the number one best-selling toy of 1985. So,
interesting.
The cartoon series. And originally, this was aired in 1982 with the series of commercials that were fully animated. And those were paid for by Hasbro. Sunbow doing production. And Marvel doing writing. This led to a 5-part miniseries, later called the Mass Device series, that was released in 1983. Followed up with another 5-episode miniseries called G.I. Joe, The Revenge of Cobra, that ran in 1984. This one was focused on a weather machine.
I think that's the only part of the series that I can clearly remember.
Yeah.
It's one of the Joes, like, throwing apples at a hurricane. Or a tornado.
It's super effective.
Nice.
Well, he's trying to poison it with the arsenic that's in the apple seeds.
Of course he is.
You're right.
What else would he be doing?
Everybody knows that apple seeds will kill you dead.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Especially if you're a tornado.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Then a full season of 55 episodes was ordered and combined with the miniseries to reach 65 for syndication. And these aired in 1985. And this was probably the height of G.I. Joe mania. Another season of 30 episodes was aired in 86, getting us to 95 episodes before the show was canceled.
Nice.
It was canceled for weird reasons. In 1987, they released the G.I. Joe movie, which went direct to video after really weak sales of Transformers and My Little Pony movies.
And I do not remember this. I remember like a few things from this movie. I don't remember the movie in its entirety, and I do want to watch it again now that I'm an adult. But I remember that this was the first movie that I watched that I actually had an emotional response to. And
wow.
I was sad that... Joe died. Every other movie I've seen up to that point, I'm just like, oh, this is funny, or like, this is just flashing lights. But this one, I was like, I can't believe they killed him. And I think it was Joe dying.
What I have a core memory with is whatever Transformer movie where they got the rust. Their bodies were deteriorating, but for some reason, I had a fever dream that night. And it caused such like a visceral memory reaction that I still to this day remember seeing that and just thinking that the rust was like the most horrible thing in the world. And like we would all die if we ever got it.
I mean, we would. It's true.
But we're not machines.
Aren't we though, Mike? Aren't we?
The movie also had mixed reviews.
This is the 1987 movie.
Yeah, this movie had mixed reviews from fans because it veered into science fiction. And at this point, the toys started to get kind of weird. This is when they introduced Globulus.
The intro to the cartoon shows like a flying city in the shape of a hooded serpent.
Of a snake, yeah.
But this,
and everybody is shooting lasers that they're calling bullets. So
it's true, but that was because they weren't actually allowed to show actual bullets, so they shot lasers,
which is better.
But then they call it bullets.
They could still go straight through you and probably cause even worse. Like, you've got this gaping hole that's just like gushing blood because the laser went straight through you.
Well, nobody was ever directly killed, and you notice every time they blow up a vehicle, the person who's driving it just jumps out to the side.
Exactly.
I wish I had that kind of luck.
Which was like the big shock for the movie, right? Because they actually did kill somebody in the movie. Mm-hmm. And that was, like,
I think, did they kill Duke? Maybe
they wanted to, but I think like the Transformers movies had come out just before.
Oh, and people were pissed that Optimus Prime.
Were pissed that they killed Optimus.
Spoilers.
Yeah,
but the G.I. Joe the movie was already animated, so they just like dubbed over on the end, like a guy like literally just runs on screen and says, "Duke's okay."
Oh, wow. It was we're still alive.
The doctor's going to use all of his bandages.
Yes.
The hero's not supposed to die. When that happened in our childhood, we were all pissed.
But the toy line also got pretty weird. This is when they introduced the snake guy, not Serpentor, the guy who was half snake.
That was
Globulus or no?
Oh, okay. Yeah.
This was another guy. He had an eye patch, and he led a secret, secret society, hidden city type Shangri-La culture.
Gotcha. It's the deep state within Cobra.
Yeah, absolutely.
Nice.
So at this point, the reason why they canceled is they actually switched production to DIC. Who ran the show from 1989 to 91. And DIC had approached Hasbro with a sweetheart deal to take over the production because up till that, Hasbro had been footing the bill for G.I. Joe.
Oh, okay.
And so they made it much, much cheaper. And they started with a limited series called Operation Dragonfire, and that allowed the show to continue until 91 with a total of 44 episodes. In the second series, the show has a massive list of voice actors, with our boys Peter Cullen, Charlie Adler, Jackson Beck, Robert Paulson, and Frank Welker featured. Side note: apparently, Bruce Timm worked on. I've heard two sources. He worked on model design, and I also heard that he did backgrounds for the show. Of course, he went on to develop Batman the Animated Series.
Nice.
All right.
Bruce Timm. Now, in your research, and I know this might be a impossible question because infinite diversity and infinite numbers of universes and whatnot, but how many characters are there in G.I. Joe?
There are... 12 billion Joes.
Is this like that Tom Cruise movie?
Where
there's like millions of Tom Cruises.
Yeah, but think that movie, but each Tom Cruise has a distinct personality and outfit that they wear.
And they're fighting Cobra, which is essentially that scene from Pirates of the Caribbean where it's just like 20 Johnny Depps.
Yeah.
Johnny Depp things. Yeah.
Nice.
So essentially, G.I. Joe is Tom Cruise versus Johnny Depp.
Mm. Oh, man.
Bam.
Whoever wins, we lose.
That is a tagline straight out of the 80s.
That was a good one, though.
Okay. Anything else you wanted to know?
What happened?
So we don't know we don't know who's funding Cobra. Who's funding G.I. Joe? Is this
G.I. Joe,
UN?
G.I. Joe is supposed to be a...
NATO?
No, it's a U.S.-funded organization. Like,
it is specifically U.S.
Yeah, because he said all-American crime or something for fighting force.
Yeah, well, like, not combined with any other fighting
it's
force.
It's all-American.
I needed to find out some of the... some things about some of the characters. So I, like, did, a, like, a little bit of a dive, like, not a very deep dive, but a little bit of a dive in some of the characters. And they do specifically state for each of the characters that they are all qualified as experts with all NATO and Warsaw Pact small arms.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
So I didn't know if they were actually, like,
basically
NATO or...
Basically, that like, if they can do NATO and Warsaw Pact, like, that means they can use all weapons. Basically.
Yeah, they're just trained in...
They can just pick up any gun that's on the battlefield in this Cold War era and just wail on it.
And it just... works. All
right. That would be insane.
Just just knowing every single gun, how it operates and everything.
Yeah. Although I guess, I mean, it would probably wouldn't be that difficult. There's probably a ton of similarities.
The biggest thing is the guns can differ on the way you unlock the slide. Some have an internal mechanism where you have to like slide a pin out. Some are just as easy as you press down on the lever and the slides off, and then you got different fire pin configurations, but there's only a finite number of configurations, as you're saying.
Yeah. It's kind of like in an infinite universe, there's only so many ways that we can rearrange atoms. So within our universe, there's an exact duplicate of the Earth just by random chance, if the universe is infinite.
Well, there's more than one, but yes, yeah.
There's an infinite number.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Hey, Adam, have you ever stood in between two mirrors? Because that would create an infinite number of atoms.
You know how,
and they would all be arranged, just like Matt said. And it could cause our universe to collapse. But I want to see infinite atoms.
Specifically me walking in between two mirrors will cause the universe to collapse.
Yes, because it would perfectly arrange infinite atoms.
It's because, because your name's Adam. We already knew that they made infinite Tom Cruises and nothing fucking happened.
Yeah, exactly.
Now I'm just thinking of, like, every famous Adam there is. Just all lined up. Like, Adam Driver, Adam West.
These are all just parts
Adam.
Of you.
Come on, you know more Adams than that.
Sean Quincy Adams. Let's see
what Adams Morgan.
Adams Morgan, yes, there we go. Samuel Adams.
You're Samuel Adams. All right, let's get into this episode. Let's get into the episode,
because there's a lot to cut out.
This is a spicy meatball.
I gotta say, first off, before we get into it, I do have to say, not every episode of G.I. Joe has the same characters, because there are so many different characters in G.I. Joe.
Yes.
I am very glad that we got this rowdy bunch for our episode.
Yeah, we got a real special group of turd buckets.
So are G.I. Joe's kind of like the Swiss Army knife of people, where
everything opens, but it's everything's just a knife.
And for some reason,
but they're just different colors. They're all sharply dressed knives. But yes, they're all knives. But you know, whatever tool, because it seems like the G.I. Joe characters always have just the right solution to the problem that they were randomly, you know, happened across or whatever happens. You know, it's like you never get like someone with demolitions in charge of like growing plants at a nursery.
There's a VO that tells us about G.I. Joe and how they're fighting Cobra. And this is done by Jackson Beck. And it's so amazingly pretentious.
Nice. Yeah.
And it feels super old timey because Jackson Beck is an old school voice actor. He did one of the original voices of Bluto, I believe.
So, and he's the voice that does the VO during the intro, the opening intro.
Yes.
Where he's like, he does like some singing and then like tries to cram in a bunch of exposition.
Well, he's not the one singing.
He's not the one singing. Oh, okay. I thought he might have been the one singing too.
So. Yeah, you, do you think he like was just singing a song in the middle of took a Johnny Cash-esque like Folsom Prison break where he'd stalk it to the audience?
I'm just imagining like him showing up in like the studio recording artist or the studio recording technician is like, you have to sing this part, you know? Like, oh fuck, all right.
All right.
G.I. Joe, he's a real American hero. And just like
G.I. Joe is an elite fan.
Having that be the song, the sing talk thing. So,
yeah.
I love sing talk.
At any rate, we open in England, where 15 miles off the coast, Duke and Shipwreck are on the command deck of the Joe's aircraft carrier. And they have an admiral there for some reason.
Yeah.
Pretty sure that guy is not a real. Is he a Joe?
No. I think he's like a cruise ship captain that just wandered on the ship. Just like had him there.
He did stay at a Holiday Inn Express once.
Okay.
Most of the Joes have fairly high ranks for no real reason.
Yeah.
They're bought. It's fine.
Wait, is that Duke that's on the bridge or is that Joe? I thought Joe was the blonde one.
I didn't think there was anyone named Joe.
There was in the original toy line. But no, there was never.
I thought there was Joe, Duke, and then Shipwreck. Jesus Christ!
You may be thinking of a character that was written in season one called Hawk, who had he was the original leader of the Joes, and they wrote him out in season two. And he doesn't appear in a lot of episodes, but he has like a bomber jacket and he's dressed like MacArthur, basically.
So I'm watching right now, and there is a guy that he's blonde haired, wearing a tan jacket.
Yeah, that's Duke.
That's Duke. Who's the guy with the beret that's like got like the cigar chewing attitude? That's got all the decorations on him. That seems to be Duke's equal. I thought that was Duke, and I thought the blonde one was Joe.
Oh, that's Flint.
That's Flint. Okay.
Flint. He's another major character. Even though he doesn't have the rank, it's always kind of like shown him as being sort of a second in command slash, you know,
he's like intermediary. He's like the exo to Duke's CO, basically.
And not that high up. He's more, he'd be more like a lieutenant.
Okay.
But he's not. He's like a warrant officer or something. Who gives a shit? I don't know how the military functions. They have all these made up levels and shit. It's basically a pyramid scheme.
It is.
You know, it's like...
That's a good point. Yeah.
Yeah. What's the difference between the Navy...
You signed up three of your friends.
So, yeah. Okay, yeah.
Exactly.
What's the difference with the Navy and Herbalife, really? Yeah. You know?
I take it I'm going to be taking the straight man in this bit, so... Where do I start?
You get your three friends to sign up, and they get three friends to sign up.
Yeah.
And you get all of their bonuses. It all goes to you. And then you have to kick it up to your program manager or commanding officer, quote unquote.
It's all a hierarchy, man.
Well, yeah, that's the whole point.
Anyway. You know who's at the top? General Schwartzman. That's right.
G.I. Schwartzman. So they are expecting Cobra to attack because they are installing a quote unquote Cobra tracking radar, which would be a really great radar if all they saw was snakes.
that would be awesome.
Yeah.
Here's the thing that I don't get, though. They start by saying they're 15 miles off the coast of Britain, and then Duke says, no sign of Cobra. Maybe we slipped past them to get into the UK, to get into Britain.
Yeah.
And this shows us that apparently the British Isles are under some sort of blockade. For some reason, like how is this possible? Like
World War III, man.
They talk later about the idea that they've been running like sneak attacks on England. I mean, it's basically again, it's World War II, right? Like they need to get the technology set up so they can do D-Day. But that's the cover story. That apparently they've been quote unquote doing sneak attacks or raids on Britain.
Hmm.
And thus the Joes are worried about sneaking past Cobra's sneak attacks.
I guess. It doesn't really say where they're coming from or going to. Like, they're a non-localized threat, it seems like.
It just seemed very bizarre to me, right from the beginning.
Anyway, the ship radar intercepts the incoming bogeys, and a group of Joes take off in what look like F-14 Tomcats. They're called Sky Screamers or something. And they are met by a force of Cobra planes.
I do like the idea of Duke running over to Shipwreck, the guy that specializes in boat combat, I'm assuming.
Yeah, Navy.
And says, hey, let's go fly a plane.
Yeah, he's a chief of Navymans. Also, like, we see everyone flying but the pilot. Like, none of these guys are pilots, but they're all flying planes.
The guy that was supposed to, the guy that's actually like, the specialized pilot doesn't show up until, like, the very end.
And Cobra is even worse. They have ninjas flying their planes.
Yeah.
and they're flying...
As they do.
they're flying A-10 with Thunderbolts, or Warthogs, rebranded as the Rattler.
The Rattler.
Yeah, and nice. they're being led by Destro, but mostly we focus on Storm Shadow.
Yes. Who, from what I understand, Storm Shadow is a bit of a complicated character. Is that right? He switches sides constantly.
Yeah, well, he's popular. Like, people liked him in Snake Eyes a lot, so, you know, he has a kind of anti-hero redemption arc occasionally, and then occasionally gets brainwashed back, etc. And they are being led by Destro, and they're all trying to dogfight by using non-lethal one-liners.
Yes,
they're all exactly. Just doing stand-up at each other in the sky.
Dare to become one with the universe, Joe! Now you see me? Now you don't!
And somehow they all can hear each other, too, because like they do, like you were saying, they do one-liners at each other. Now I see you. Now I don't.
Yeah. Yeah, like it's like they're having a conversation, which would be great. Like, what if, you know, what if software was at the point where you could just automatically hook up to the person you're trying to kill?
Or, like, just hook up to other vehicles. Like, you're driving along, and then, like, you just look over and be like, hey, what's up? And I can hear you.
I can hear you.
You're like, hey, baby, what you driving? I'm driving a Tesla! I think it's important to preserve the environment!
I can't stop!
It's heading to this cliff!
Duke manages to shoot down Storm Shadow, and that breaks up the attack.
Yes.
Because they quickly retreat.
They lose one plane, so they have to retreat immediately. And essentially, this entire thing was just to allow Cobra to show their entire ass to Joe, so Joe knows exactly how many there are and what's going on and where they're at.
Yes.
Well, maybe not where they're at, but
And Joe doesn't at all go on the offensive at all. Instead, they, like, go about their business.
Yeah, like, oh, they're retreating. Let's retreat, too.
Right, yeah.
Let's not rout them.
Good tactics.
Blow them up.
But, anyway, Storm Shadow crashes into a lake. And it's a little... At first, it was a little unclear if this was the lake or the ocean. But I think they did an okay job conveying that this was a lake. And he escapes the plane because he happens to have, like, a rebreather mask. That he can just strap on.
Yeah, this is the point where I really wanted to ask Derek what sort of underwater gear he kept in his cockpit.
Yeah, yeah. How many underwaters do you have? I mean, they probably have some because you do want to try to do a water landing if you're shot down.
Do you though? I don't know. From
it's better than a ground landing.
Tough. Is it though?
Well, if you're on an aircraft carrier, you're not going to have a lot of choice.
Yeah, you're on an aircraft carrier. Sure.
Well, it's a water landing or boat landing.
Yeah, that's why Sully put down in the East River. Like, you want to land in the water if you are not able to land normally.
Can confirm.
Yeah. I didn't know if that was the case. I always thought the water landings were supposed to be incredibly difficult.
In the open ocean, perhaps, but inland waterways are just as smooth as a runway.
Plus, like... in a lake or a stream or something, a stream or a river, you can just swim to shore. So, you know, like, river, you're much closer to being rescued. I'm going to go crash in the creek. Bring your 747
2 feet deep.
At this point, a low detail apparition of a woman shows him a sword resting on a stone table at the bottom of the lake.
And his immediate thought, just as everybody's immediate thought, is, ooh, Excalibur.
Exactly. And you know that because he calls it Excalibur when he surfaces, and he raises the sword up, and it goes, shwing!
And then lightning strikes, and a storm starts. But yes.
Yes.
And I do have to love, from this point forward, all of the lightsaber sounds that Excalibur makes.
Yeah, it's
whenever he swings it around.
It is not subtle. You know, it's a very swingy sword.
Yeah.
It's like it's watching an episode of Starfleet. Getting its swing moments.
That's it's right. So swingy.
And it sees Carrara just grunting constantly at a robot.
Yeah, and it's like going, the alien's masturbating. So meanwhile, as the storm is brewing, we cut to a castle on the moor. And Cobra Commander and Destro are inside, and they're quibbling over what is a pretty fucking cool map. A topographical map with like what seems to be like digital projections of ships and stuff.
On it.
They're very well funded in their medieval castle.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's Cobra Commander basically yelling at Destro for fucking up the assault, and then Destro saying, well, it was your men that decided to retreat.
Yeah.
Which led me to question, what is the relationship here between Destro and Cobra Commander?
One of them is the Tsundere.
Destro is more like an ally of convenience, and he, you know, like, he always needs to be convinced.
But where does he sit in the command structure is the question I have. Like, because it seems like Cobra Commander is in command of all the Cobra QB, Cobra troops, so.
I think he's like in a, you know, like a specialist contractor that the CEO brings in, you know, like he helps make everything run, but he doesn't like own any of the organization or have an official role.
So he's a consultant.
Yeah, he's like a consultant, yeah.
Hmm.
Mm.
Okay.
Anyway, they also affirm that the radar has to go, or they won't be able to nip out for some fish and chips. So the Joes use their hovercraft to move the radar to shore with a much smaller force.
Yes.
Not really defined who they take with them, but there are people that we don't see again.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, did Shipwreck go with them? Oh, I guess, yeah, Shipwreck and...
Yeah, we don't...
Who was it, Mary Jane or...
No, we don't see Shipwreck again.
That's true, we don't.
Yeah, so he stayed with the boat. He was like, no, my place is here.
He didn't even show up at the end with all the hovercrafts attacking?
I don't think so. And they unload in a small town where Storm Shadow sneaks in because their perimeter security is shit. It's terrible.
Yeah, they keep letting this clown just like walk up to them and ask them stupid questions.
He uncovers what looks like just a box full of circuit boards, a big crate just full of loose circuit boards, loosely stacked on top of each other.
And then loosely covered with a tarp in preparation of a huge storm.
Right.
And he uses Excalibur like a lightsaber to basically cut his way into the crate to get it unwrapped.
Mm-hmm.
And this is when Excalibur was making all of the lightsaber sounds.
Yeah.
Whenever he was swinging it around.
And I have to imagine the Joes have serious logistical problems if this is how they move equipment.
Yeah.
Like, great tacticians, terrible logicians, you know?
Yeah. I can see that.
You could take it to the enemy, but you'll never get a warm meal.
I mean, that could be the reason why they never actually win, because, you know, every battlefield commander knows that, you know, the battle's won on logistics. So.
Yeah, that Napoleon knew it. He was all about the logistics.
That's right.
How often do we see the same characters all the time? It's because they die of starvation after
this. That's the only real way to kill a Joe is to starve them to death.
They're just dropping off due to malnutrition.
They've got, you know, all kinds of drugs keeping them going up until the time that the mission is complete, and then they just drop dead of cardiac arrest. Their heart just stops.
Nice, it would make sense that they've got Duke jazzed up on amphetamines. He's a little shouty this episode. Storm Shadow is stopped from destroying the chips by what is kind of our main characters for this episode.
Yeah, Footloose.
The shit is moving so fast right now, it's really hard to know who the main characters are exactly.
Yeah.
But I do love the fact that he stopped because Footloose literally shoots Excalibur, forcing Storm Shadow to basically like veer his swing off and then cuts through a statue instead of the computer chips.
I had to watch that a couple times to really get what the hell was happening.
I was like, is he so bad with a sword that he just can't hit a box? Like, yeah. What the hell's going on here?
Yeah, that was not very clear. At any rate, they introduce Footloose, who's a stereotypical typical basketball coach that nobody likes.
Yes.
Yes.
Who Spirit, who's a terrible stereotype of a Native American and his menagerie.
Oh, horrible, horrible stereotype of a Native American.
Yeah, and Quick Kick, who is a terrible stereotype of a Japanese-American martial artist.
In all fairness, he is a Korean-Japanese-American.
He's of mixed heritage. He is both Korean and Japanese.
And the only thing that I got to say for Quick Kick is the fact that he's not trying to do a horrible Japanese accent while he's talking.
No.
The actual voice actor they had to play him, who is actually Cambodian, as it turns out, was not trying to do, like, a caricature of his character. He sounds like a normal American.
Yeah, because Quick Kick was raised in Los Angeles.
In LA,
he's second generation.
He's like a stuntman in LA. Yeah,
he was for a while. Let's argue about this.
Yes.
But it's interesting, though. I looked into Quick Kick's history, and I looked into Footloose's history, and I could not bring myself to research Spirit. Because I could not... I just... He's just a terrible stereotype.
Yes, he's very bad.
It's so cringy.
So I can do a little bit there. His real name is Charlie Iron Knife.
Oh.
And he was born a poor Native American in the Taos Pueblo Reservation in Taos, New Mexico.
Taos.
Well, Taos, New Mexico.
Taos,
come at me, want to go home. His primary military specialty is infantry, and his secondary military specialty is social services.
My God.
He was a hunting guide through high school and then served in Southeast Asia after joining the military. Spirit returned to civilian life to complete his education and then inexplicably returned to the service. His primary specialty is a tracker, and he is a qualified expert in the M16, M1911A1 auto pistol, and a Remington sniper rifle.
So wait a minute. He's an expert in an M16, and he served, quote-unquote, in Southeast Asia. Fucking Spirit went to Nam.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Holy shit.
I'm pretty sure he was supposed to be a wind talker.
Yeah.
In Nam, so.
Wait, wind talkers at World War II?
Yeah.
The war wind talkers were the Korean War, if I recall correctly.
No. Nicolas Cage said it was World War II.
I learned from Nicolas Cage.
Nicolas Cage has never done me wrong, man.
I can't wait for the day when I go talk to Nicolas Cage and give him all these fake facts. And he can say, where did you learn this stuff, Albie? I learned it from watching you.
I think we actually have commercial. That.
Sound so Joe's pursue Storm Shadow, who escapes on a motorcycle, and Footloose clings to the bike, but is promptly knocked out by Storm Shadow and taken prisoner.
And I don't understand why Storm Shadow ran away, because he actually had these three Joes on the ropes. Like, he cut their weapons, of course.
Yeah, yeah. He could have
killed them very easily, but.
But also, like, he cuts the barrels off their guns. Like, the guns can still shoot.
Yeah.
And if you're close enough to cut the barrels off of them, I don't think accuracy matters a ton.
I guess it is.
He's, like, feet away. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Those guns would still very much work.
This was the point in time.
Once, but they would at least get one off.
This is when I noticed in the cartoon that Quick Kick does not wear shoes.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He's that guy.
Very stereotypical.
He's that guy.
I don't know. It's like he's got to get like tons of like thorns and burrs stuck in his feet. I don't care how good your calluses are.
He's the guy on the subway who's wearing those shoes that have individual toes.
The toesies. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's like a professional runner.
Yeah. He's a runner who runs barefoot.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Professional runner. He just runs for a living.
Running.
And then you ran.
Okay. The storm is getting worse when Spirit and Quick report back to Duke, but they're interrupted by Beamish, who's a local stereotype of a Scotsman.
is his name Beamish? I thought his name was like Amish, and then Duke kept on calling him Beamish because Duke is just a racist prick.
Amish, I'm going to call you Beamish. Yeah. But still, it's very stereotypical.
That is a level of joke that this show does not aspire to.
That's true. That's true.
It's way too highbrow. Well,
Beamish is just a horrible stereotype of a Scotsman, and I don't know what he's doing in this small British village.
One of the write-ups said they're in Northern England. I don't know.
Oh, did they say they're in Northern England? Okay. It looked like they were in Southern England.
But that's
based off of the maps that we were being shown.
Right. So. Yeah. You would assume because it kind of infers that we're seeing like the white cliffs of Dover.
Yeah. Exactly.
And also, like, a lot of the Arthurian legend was kind of based around Wales. Although, you know, no one really has a location.
Knows where it is. Yeah.
Yeah.
Island of Man is like the closest now where people think that it might have taken place.
It's a cool name, but I don't really want to go there. I want to go to the other one.
Island of Woe, man.
Oh, whoa.
So they have islands like the Denny's where you're like, don't go to that Denny's, go to the good one.
Go to the good Denny's, yeah. That one has one of those claw machines in it.
Ooh.
Actually, that would be fun. Isn't that just a Dave's and Buster at that point in time? A Denny's with a claw machine?
Legally, yes. Legally, it is.
Nice.
Anyway, Beamish says the storm will never stop unless Excalibur is returned, and the whole of the English island will drown.
I love how it's just so casually, like, existing. Like,
yeah,
you know, oh, yeah, Excalibur's real, and no one's going to question that.
That's okay. Yeah, yeah. No, it's okay, because Duke is a Randian objectivist and rejects all mythology and folklore.
And, in fact, lectures his people about potentially believing folklore too,
right?
Because he yells at them for like even thinking about it. So
yeah, and so he orders Spirit, Animals, and Quickie Mart to find Footloose.
Yes, he sends two men behind enemy territory to go find another comrade when there should have been an entire squad of people that he sends out. Instead, talks about it like it's some sort of errand.
Yeah. Meanwhile, back at Spooky Castle, Storm Shadow dumps Footloose on the floor, but Footloose is just playing possum.
He's just hiding his eyes. He's checking his eyelids for holes.
He's going commando. And
this is when I was I keep on saying this is when, because this is when it happens. But when I was watching this, and they did like a close-up on Footloose's head, I was like, does that motherfucker got pot leaves stuck to his helmet? Is he trying to be like Cool Dad G.I. Joe or some shit?
He kind of is. He kind of is like a West Coast wannabe guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
His name is Footloose, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Uh-huh.
He overpowers the Crimson Guard, who have the most kick-ass uniforms, and take his gun, but botches his assassination attempt on Cobra Commander. Mm-hmm. And then blames the weapon.
Now, remember, boys and girls, Footloose has about 5 grenades attached to his body.
Yeah.
Like, every place where there's a hook on his utility vest and on his backpack and on his belt, he's got a grenade. So. Yeah.
You're right. I mean, like, if he really had the strength of his convictions, he would have pulled one of the pins and just grabbed Cobra Commander and not let go. Commander.
Exactly.
It's really just, like, cowardness in the face of the enemy.
It is cowardice.
How dare he try to survive?
That motherfucker. He could have ended this entire thing right here at episode, what is this?
No, 35? They just would have 45. Brought in Globulus earlier.
Oh, okay.
And they would have been fighting like a snake centaur.
Snake centaur. Nice.
Yes.
Just like in my dreams.
Yeah. sung to the tune of Earth Angel.
Snake centaur. Snake centaur. Snake centaur and me.
So... Storm Shadow collapses a pillar on Footloose when he attempts to flee, and at this point Destro notices the sword and realizes it's Excalibur, and he vows that he will get the sword.
Vow locked in.
Yes.
At betraying his master, but who the fuck cares? This never comes up again. This is a dead end plot, side plot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it comes up again.
It does come up again. Yeah, briefly. But it just shows Destro wants the sword.
Yeah,
understands its power and like how Cobra Commander is kind of daft and doesn't really recognize that it's a thing.
Yeah, because they always depict Destro as being smart and ruthless, but you know, for now, serving this master because it's expedient or profitable.
Yeah.
Using Storm Shadow's intelligence, Cobra makes an amphibious sneak attack on the radar installation site.
Don't forget. For some reason, there's a dam.
Later.
For some reason, there's a dam.
We'll wait. I have in my notes. It hits the dam that no one knew about before 2 seconds ago.
Yeah.
They do have like one line of exposition where they're standing on the dam, where Duke is standing on the dam for no reason, saying, oh, hey, there's a dam here. And then it just goes on to the amphibious assault.
Yeah, I completely missed that. This show is dense. It moves fast. It is dense.
They crammed like an hour's worth of plot into this 20-minute cartoon, so.
And yet, nothing happens.
Yeah, exactly. it ends with idiots laughing at nothing.
Yes. At this point, Mutt, Junkyard, and Flint are pushed back by the attack and attempting to defend. And I just want to do a point of lore here. Do not confuse Mutt at Junkyard with Law and Order. Mutt was a canine and infantry specialist, while Law specialized in military police and intelligence, and these are totally different, and not the same idea of a man with a dog from different generations of the toy line.
Thank you.
I just wanted to make that clear.
I'm glad that we had that clarification, because I think that it is very important for us, though. So.
In the meantime, the Joes are evacuating the town and setting up a line of defense at the lake. Flint says Mutt to double back to the village, really for no reason, while the two forces meet on the beach.
Mm-hmm. And I think this is when Destro tries to shoot a bazooka round at Storm Shadow.
Yes.
Before we get there, there's a guy with some binoculars doing a Jack Nicholson impression.
Yeah.
I thought that was Mutt. Wasn't that Mutt?
I don't think so. We never see his face. I don't know who that is.
Okay.
It's a character I don't think talks again, but I mean, that's a level of complexity this show just does not getting into, right?
Yeah.
So I have to imagine that's a character that they just don't name or...
Well, and I did like that delivery, though, because I thought it was a pretty fun line for them, too.
Yeah.
To just sort of, like, throw in out of nowhere.
Break out the ice and strike up the band, boys and girls. The party's about to begin.
He was kind of doing Jack Nicholson doing Hunter S. Thompson.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
wait.
The party's about to get started.
Yeah. Fantastic writing. And the Joes are close to defeat when Wild Bill and his mobile cavalry show up.
This fucking
from like nowhere,
like Deus Ex Machina. Yes. Yeah.
So they get these helicopters coming in, and they drive Cobra back and turn the tide.
With Cobra's retreat, they do shoot off one last rocket.
Yeah, Major Blood gives them a parting shot with a hip-fired rocket launcher. And he completely misses all the humans that are directly in front of him and overshoots the town, destroying a dam that's on the far side of the landscape.
That's there for some reason.
Yeah.
They have a lake, and then they also have a dam that doesn't have any river heading into the dam. It's literally just a dam up against the side of a mountain.
Yeah, you don't
so
really see
no
where...
no reason for it to exist. Yeah, it's almost like a cistern.
Yeah, you don't really see where the inlet is. Yes. And this shot was actually pretty great. It had, like, parallax movement. It looked really good. And this whole combat sequence, I thought, was, like, the best part of the episode.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was pretty fun.
Agreed. Well, actually, no. I'll tell you what I thought was the best part of the episode. I'll tell you that later.
Okay.
But this leads to that whole flood sequence.
Yeah. Mud was knocked out by a rocket strike in the village, and he wakes up.
No, yeah, and he, like, saves the cat, but then there's the flood sequence, not the mud sequence. And the flood sequence...
This is...
Basically just sort of washes everybody away a little bit, and it's just sort of like, oh, all the Joes are, like, jumping back up on buoyant, debris in the wave. That's not how these fucking waves work. This would have been, like, a fucking meat grinder. every Joe that was in that city would have been dead two times over.
Yeah.
They would have been picking body parts out of the shoreline for months. So.
Yeah, I like that they showed Mutt just getting freight trained by a wall of water, and the next scene is him surfing on top of a log.
Yeah, yeah, with the cat tucked into his jacket.
As the other...
dog surfing next to him. So.
Yeah. Exactly. Like, this thing would be filled with trees and rocks and debris and other people's body parts. At any rate, the Joes find the town ruined and the radar destroyed. But we cut away to Quick Kick and Spirit, who have tracked Storm Shadow to the spooky castle.
Yes.
Although it's phrased as if Spirit was guided there by...
his bald eagle.
By, like, arcane knowledge or insight.
And yes, throughout this entire episode, Spirit is a Native American, and they refer to him as Indian throughout this entire episode.
Yeah.
And I really like the idea of Spirit actually being Indian, like Hindi. Like he just sort of like gave up at some point in time and just like went with it. Just stop calling him.
Yeah, that's like why he's Indian. Such a stereotype. He's just leaning into it, you know? Like,
exactly.
Yeah.
He's like, every now and again you see him like bob his head a little bit and he's like, no, I can't do that.
Yeah, it isn't terrible writing.
About my ancestors.
It's actually, you know, it's a subtle story about identity and assimilation, not just terribly abusive, cringy writing.
With, like, that whole, like, reverse racism of, like, but the Native American character is going to be, like, super powered and, like, know everything. It's like, that's still racist, dude. That's not what he's doing.
Congratulations, you've made Tonto.
Yeah.
Quick tries to scale the wall, but is knocked off the parapet by Storm Shadow.
Falls hundreds of feet.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
To what should be his death and just injures his leg a little bit.
High Kick let out a special call to alert Spirit that he'd injured his leg. But he is instantaneously healed by Spirit with his ancient Indian medicine powers.
But no, yes, apparently this is supposed to be like Quick Kick actually broke his leg and then Spirit healed him using magic.
Yes.
That's what this is supposed to be.
Yeah, doesn't Spirit like set his leg?
Yeah, it seems to. He just like crunches it.
And he even says, I've set your leg.
Yeah.
But then Quick Kick just like jumps up and starts dancing around. He's like, oh, dancing in the rain. I feel so great. And that's when Spirit was like, yes, I've healed you with my Indian powers.
No, he says next time I'll try to heal his brain.
Yeah, he has internal dialogue.
Yeah, he's the only one who's allowed to think, you know? Did you ever think about that, man?
Because he's a Hindi man leaning into Native American mythology.
Yeah, we need to know this. Like, it's important that the viewer understand the irony.
Yeah.
It's the only way it can be expressed. He also just happens to have found a secret entrance. And the pair essentially walk in, finding Footloose in a cell.
Yes. They find Footloose in a cell. Quick Kick pulls out an exploding shuriken and blows the door off the cell with his exploding shuriken. And then Footloose comes running out of the cell with all of his fucking grenades intact.
Yeah, he's completely on model. But they're escaping but are pursued by the Crimson Guard again. Quick Kick finds a large spotlight as they barricade a room, and he makes a signal with a curtain.
Well, first he asks for something sharp to cut it with.
Right, and that's when Spirit has under his headband.
Pulls out from under his headband a tiny Excalibur sword.
Yeah, a tiny knife.
Which he must have picked up from the local gift shop when they were just in town. And passes it over to Quick Kick.
Can you imagine how stinky that knife would be? He's been up there like crossfire sweating into his headband. And
how uncomfortable does this forehead have to be? Like, he's got like an indentation of a sword in his forehead now.
Yeah, that's why the headband lays flat, because the knife actually just fits into a little slot that he's worn into his skull.
He's worn into his forehead.
Yeah, like the story you were telling about people who've used clay pipes to wear a hole in their teeth.
To wear a hole in their teeth, yeah.
They see the signal, which essentially is the words, Yo, Joe.
Yeah.
Which Did he have to cut it backwards?
He did. He did. Yeah.
Well, you could cut it forwards and just flip it over.
Good thinking.
You're in charge of our escape procedures, David.
The funny thing was,
what do you mean? I'm the one holding you hostage.
All right, good point.
Exactly. So you're in charge of our escape as well. We're so passive. The funny thing was, when he pulled that curtain down and he was like, "I'm going to send a signal," I was like, is this motherfucker going to start sending smoke signals? Is this going to go into further racist level here? But when Flint sees the Yojo, it is right after he's like, "Oh, we need some sort of signal to find this place." And this sets off a series of comments from Flint, where essentially at the end of this episode, he should think that he is God because everything he says happens.
He just has to ironically state an outcome that would be good for him, and then it occurs.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I love it. I'm here for that. I really wanted him, at the end, be like, "Okay, women are going to jump out of this cake and dance all around me."
Yeah. This is the winning lottery ticket.
I'm finally going to be free of G.I. Joe.
finally. They've changed the laws on the pension, and I'm eligible now. And I don't have to serve out my whole time.
Excellent. So I'm not throwing away those 15 years, but I don't have to get to 20. Thank God.
That trucker I killed is still alive.
He sent me a birthday card.
I'm not a murderer anymore.
Okay, there we go.
He sent me a birthday card. Like your grandma.
Exactly.
Hey, thanks for not killing me.
Here's $5, honey.
Actually, that my grandma did send that card.
That one time I was in the hospital, thanks for not pulling the plug.
Yeah. I made it through. along with her a living will for recitation.
Resuscitation.
Anyway, the three heroes race to escape as the door is battered down.
And we get one of the best scenes that does remind me of Community doing the parody of G.I. Joe, where both Footloose and Spirit run up to bad guys and they punch in tandem simultaneously to knock out the bad guys at the exact same time.
Two different bad guys?
Yeah.
But Quick Kick sacrifices himself to provide a distraction while Footloose and Sprint shoot open the drawbridge and run right into the welcoming open arms of Duke and Flint. And that starts a firefight over the moat.
Yeah, and this is actually my favorite scene of the episode. It is where Quick Kick is facing off against Storm Shadow. The Bald Eagle.
They're on the castle wall.
I mean, Spirit sends the order to his Bald Eagle to grab the lightsaber by the blade, essentially, and to fly off with it. And Storm Shadow retreats, but before he retreats, basically does what would equate to a nut shot on Quick Kick by just leaning down and punching him in the leg that he broke earlier,
which infers that he was just up there at the top of the wall just watching the whole thing. It's like,
exactly.
Oh, he hurt his leg. Right there, right below the knee. Okay, good to know.
Excellent. That's his weak spot.
Yeah, but he
I'll
does
kick
like,
him there later.
He does just sucker kick the knee, you know?
He doesn't even kick. He punches him. He just leans down and does a nut tap movement into his leg and then runs off.
And it immediately snaps.
Exactly.
The rain immediately stops.
Yes, the important plot point is the sword winds up being taken back to the Lady of the Lake. We missed that plot point.
Who catches it? Catches it within her hand above the waves.
Yeah.
The remaining Joes arrive on hovercrafts, and Cobra is driven to escape on their swamp buggies of some kind.
Yep.
And the Joes fix the town and declare the mission a success because Mutt saved a cat.
Yep, Mutt saved a cat.
That's right.
For some little girl. But we do still get Beamish comes in.
Yeah, how the hell does he keep breaching their perimeter?
Yeah, he's the magical Scottish character.
He's walking into their command centers.
Yeah.
Multiple times.
The Joes have terrible operational security.
They do. Their OPSEC is just garbage. But the important part is Joe is double, like, he's like questioning his life choices at this point in time. And it's like, you know what, dudes?
You mean Duke?
Duke was like, you know what, guys? We're trying to set up this radar. We completely fucking obliterated the small British village. Every civilian here is dead except for that blonde girl and that Scottish dude. There is like no fucking way that this was a good thing. And then the Scottish dude is like, no, this was good. You might have killed everybody, but you know what? You could rebuild the city and we could start over again. The most important thing is you stopped Cobra.
Right.
And it's like...
Yeah,
no, it's not.
Let me just
how much fucking collateral damage do they cause?
Just let me just take this little run child and begin the repopulation process.
God, oh, Jesus.
God.
I've been planning this all along. I'm a Scotsman.
I'm a grooming Scotsman.
I'm the real Cobra.
They call me Mongoose.
Oh, Jesus. No, they call me Ricky Dicky Tommy. So, what did we think, gentlemen?
What did we learn?
Oh, that's right, the PSA.
The PSA, you said us. That's right.
Yes.
Yes, isn't that the one with is that Footloose that's in that one?
No, it's Snow Job.
Yeah, it's Snow Job.
Snow Job. And character named Snow Job.
Yeah. Unbelievable.
The kids are playing on the ice.
It's a made-up thing when your kid catches you saying the real thing.
That's right.
They're running cover for the parents.
I had heard that a snow job was supposed to be a job in the military that was very easy to do. An easy mission.
Hmm.
But... at any rate, the kids are playing on what turns out to be thin ice, and Snowjob slides up, and he looks so cozy. They manage to rescue the kid, which is interesting that Snowjob does fucking nothing.
Yeah, he just has the kid do all the work to try to save the other kid.
He just stands there. He is all in white, though, and he looks good.
He doesn't even give him like good instructions. Though,
he gives me real stupid, sexy Flanders vibes.
Feels like I'm wearing nothing at all, nothing at all, nothing at all.
Ooh, nice.
Yeah,
and I do like the fact that the kid, when he slipped on the ice, basically landed on his face on the ground.
Yeah,
it's great.
The other kid has one of those big balls on his hat that you like so much.
He does. Yeah. I wonder if he's got chrome in there.
Is chrome a drug I've never heard of? What?
What is that?
Adrenochrome. Yeah.
Oh! You're like, you're like, Fury roading it.
Yeah, you know? Hunter S. Thompson-ing it. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, you're. Yeah.
Pint of ether.
No. He's got like a little pituitary gland in there that he can chew on every now and again, just in case he falls beneath the ice.
Yeah.
That's so gross.
That's what I want instead of a cyanide capsule in my tooth. I want a pituitary adrenal gland.
or an adrenal gland.
Adrenochrome. You took too much, man. Too much.
Yeah. And then I can just crunch as like a last resort. But the last resort would be like I get asked a tough question in a meeting.
Yeah, he just like roid out basically, like with a full blown erection, just running through the office. And then like your boss is just like, "That's why we hired him. You're getting a raise, Matthew."
Look at him. We'll send you our bill. I do feel like this held up in a way, in that like. A fuck ton happens. There's dozens of characters. It's all fairly followable, but it's just moving so fast. And there's like a lot of fight scenes and animation and explosions. Like it's pretty frenetic.
Yeah.
The writing.
I did enjoy it for that, but it did definitely like leave an itch unscratched when I'm like, but what is this? And like, if you like, just like asking any questions of it, it's suddenly you get into like this whole like, oh, this is just pop violence. This is just like a poppy, action-packed thing with bright lights and sounds and pictures.
Right. So. And I do think that like fans like to point out like, oh, they weren't allowed to show, you know, people being shot or characters dying or anything. Yeah. And I was like, no, I mean, they set out to make this. Like, I think this is the real vision of what they wanted.
Yeah. The one thing that I immediately walked away with from this, though, was this is so fucking racist. it's in its attempt to be inclusive, it is so fucking racist.
Oh, yeah.
Well, they use caricatures of, every possible...
Yeah.
Yeah.
The only thing that I am so glad for is the fact that they didn't give Quick Kick some, hackney, horrible Japanese accent. They didn't have,
like South Andy Park Rooney. Or something.
Yeah, yeah.
Matt Parker, Trace
No,
Stone,
I mean, he's a different kind of stereotype because he apparently grew up in Watts where his dad owned a Korean convenience store.
Yeah, yeah. So he's still a stereotype.
Yeah.
At the very least, they don't have him talking like a stereotype. At least, he's no. Is an actual American, essentially.
No, they leave that for Storm Shadow.
Yeah. Storm Shadow was fucking, we didn't even go into that when we were talking about it. Like, he only talks in haikus, and it's all with, a horrible Japanese accent.
Yeah, yeah.
Like a caricature Japanese accent.
And he says, quote-unquote mysterious things.
Yeah, I said Andy Rooney. I think it's Mickey Rooney or whoever.
Yeah, Mickey Rooney.
The person that used to play a Japanese character way back in the day and just stuck chopsticks in his teeth and crossed his eyes. Yeah.
Yeah,
Andy Rooney, a wrestler or something like that?
It was one of those Roonies,
No, Andy Rooney was the angry guy in 60 Minutes.
I did come across in my research that there was another G.I. Joe movie that was being planned in 2019.
Oh, really?
That was going to, of which the only character that was named was Chuckles.
Chuckles?
Was that an actual character from...
Yes.
Okay. Was he the clown G.I. Joe?
Chuckles was actually a fun character. He's basically Magnum P.I.
He was like Magnum P.I. Okay.
Yeah, but if P.I. had stayed in the military, and he wore, he was from the South, and he wore flowered shirts, and he was kind of like an intelligence and espionage expert.
I would be surprised if they didn't have a black man that spoke in, Jive.
They've got Roadblock, so there are, we just don't, in this episode, we don't get.
It's not in this episode, yeah.
In our catalog of sins. We only have these three character entries.
What do you think the catalog of sin gets mailed out? Is it like a fall thing? Is it like right before Christmas?
Yeah.
Like, is it thick? Is it like a Macy's catalog or?
Well, it's only got 7 pages.
Oh. Well, I mean,
7 pages or 7 chapters?
7 chapters.
Then you can get a lot of those chapters.
You can fit a lot of merchandise into each one of those chapters.
Yeah, you can fit a lot into.
Let me tell you. You want to see some good stuff? If
in the lust chapter, you can fit a lot.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
You know what's surprisingly gaping. Surprisingly, Sloth is a pretty short chapter.
That's awesome.
I would think it would come out quarterly. It's incredible that they still publish it as it's like the phone book. It's gotten smaller and smaller over the digital age. Mm-hmm. But they still make it.
Well, yeah.
Ooh.
Online is okay. But when they tried to do Sky Sin in the seat back pockets, they just had some goofy stuff in there. But some rich guy would always want to buy it.
Was this a Skynet joke?
No, Sky Mall.
Oh. Right.
Remember how they always had these really overpriced things, like the hot dog maker that was like a toaster, but you put 2 hot dogs in there in the bun and it would cook your hot dog and heat up your bun too. But it was like $200. So I was always like, who would buy this?
Somebody who wanted to put their dick in it.
Yeah, like that thing.
100%.
That's an egg cooker where you're supposed to crack a bunch of eggs into it and it creates an egg tube.
Yeah.
What do you do with an egg tube?
You eat it and then vomit.
You try to do it in one gulp. You just slide it down your throat.
I'm just flying my drone down the egg tube.
I like it. Well, I don't. Well, who cares what you don't like? I care.
Anyway, what David, do we want to talk about if we want to keep this? What's our next segment here?
Yeah, did we like this enough to keep it? Mike, what do you think? Should we keep this or not? It's all on your shoulders.
I don't know, guys.
Make the right choice, Mike. Make the right choice to keep it.
How many times can they save the day? 45? I think we've seen them save the day. So unless we just want to see, you know, if they're going to have some stereotypical woman in another episode.
Yes,
where it's
are.
Like,
yes.
She's like half unbuttoned blouse or something like that.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, that's going to be the thing.
Yep.
All right, well, then if we could guarantee that we get that episode, then I'm in.
Cobra has the nerdy one. They have the one with glasses.
Oh, yeah, the Baroness. Oh, so, oh yeah, yeah, she's my favorite.
So.
All right, well, then let's see this out.
Do you think the Baron, you know, do you think I could fly my drone through a Baroness and Carmen Sandiego sandwich?
No.
If there's infinite universes, then there's a universe out there that you can make that happen.
I mean, according to my theory, there's only so many ways to arrange matter. So there's infinite numbers of me in this universe that is doing that right now.
Exactly.
Exactly. Jinx.
She was a G.I. Joe. Jinx.
She was, yeah. Was she a G.I. Joe or was she
a
Cobra?
And also, she was a G.I. Joe. And also, she was in the movie. Who's everybody's favorite G.I. Joe?
Oh, Jesus.
Who's your favorite Joe?
Jesus G.I. Joe.
Well, I have a very limited knowledge base because I don't remember all this from when I was a kid. I'm sure I probably did watch all of it.
Mm.
But if I recall correctly, I thought the bad guys were cooler.
They are very cool. The trooper designs for G.I. Joe were actually pretty great. The Cobra Troopers,
yeah. With like the red outfit with the V that goes all the way down past their dick. Yes.
That's the Crimson Guard, and I can see why you like that, because you like Colossus and Nightcrawler's costumes.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Because you like the man string.
I'm going to have to go with Shipwreck, just because like, he's out and proud, and like...
Yeah.
Like, he's obviously... like a big daddy, and like I'm very happy when people are living their best lives when they are their best selves, and I think that's who he is. So.
Why isn't he a stereotype? Why is this allowed?
I'm gonna go with the one that was doing the Jack Nicholson impression.
The one with no face. We don't know who that is.
That was good.
Well, I do have to say I did like Flint just because he kept on like being like, oh, I wish this rain would stop, and the rain would stop. You're like, oh, I wish that door would open, and the door opened. It's like, oh, all right, I wish people would show up and win hovercraft and save our asses, and they show up and save their asses.
Like, yeah. It's like
if I was him at that point in time, I'd be like, ooh.
He's like, fuck, I've got Scarlet Witch powers.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mike, who is your favorite G.I. Joe?
I guess my favorite character is Kung Fu Joe.
Okay.
Kung Pao Joe,
because he's Japanese, so I'm partial to that.
Your favorite isn't Cover Girl?
Nah.
Lady Jane?
Or Lady Jane?
Nah.
Yeah.
Nope. Kung Pao Chicken.
Matt, who's yours?
Well, you know, I was deep into G.I. Joe. As I said, like, G.I. Joe and Lego waged a war for my childhood that ultimately Lego has carried to a tremendous victory. But for a long time, the competition was fierce. Minnie died.
Minnie melted in the plastic pits of Scrapala. In your basement's furnace.
Yes. Yeah.
Oh, I forgot about the twins. Okay.
Tamex and Z-Max.
Yeah, Tamex and Z-Max. Yeah, I remember that now.
That was like the price of failure was you would be melted down and converted into the other toy. So yes. I converted all of my G.I. Joes into Lego through a painful process.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
This is your ultimate sacrifice, G.I. Joe. Growing up, I liked Flint a lot, but I think my all-time favorite was probably Dusty.
Dusty. Okay.
Yeah. There's nothing special about him. None of these people are special or even distinct. They just have different clothes on. Yeah, he's like a desert guy.
Desert guy.
Man. He likes to desert it up.
Dusty's real name is Ronald W. Tador. He's based on an anagram of Hasbro. Wow. Hasbro, gotcha. Nice.
Yeah, nice. Corporate masters.
Born in Las Vegas, Nevada, he grew up in the desert and became intimately familiar with it.
Ooh, he fucked the desert. He fucked the desert. Ooh, gross. His sand, sand would get everywhere. This is Anakin's nightmare.
Exactly. All of these characters have, like, 5 pages of Wikipedia for each character. This is a rich and robust history for this, IP, so...
Honestly, I think there's meat on these bones.
I have a new question before we get to that.
Okay.
Were you a G.I. Joe, what G.I. Joe would you be? As in, like, what would your G.I. Joe powers or name or acronym be?
Oh, wow. Ooh.
Mine would be TNT.
Oh.
My name would be TNT, and I would be an expert in demolitions. So basically, I'd be able to... off camera, create or pull out any kind of explosive from my pack. Doesn't matter how complicated it would be. It would always magically I'd have the right block of C4 or an entire bundle of dynamite, or I'd have the remote detonator for the satellite system that's going haywire because, you know, I just happened to hack it out of random parts. So that would be my special power.
And you would have a nemesis on the Cobra side who is just a bridge.
I think I would be the Wolfman, and I would have a background in training animals for usage in the military.
And a pet wolf.
And I would have my pet wolf. Mm-hmm. Yes.
And you would be legally distinct from Mutt and
legally distinct from Junkyard, Mutt,
as well as from Law and Order.
Law and Order, yes, exactly. Because mine's a wolf.
Yeah, yeah.
Clearly.
Which means they took the dog model and they painted it gray.
That's right.
Yeah.
Oh my god, that sounds like...
Yeah, it's for wilderness missions, not urban missions.
Yeah, yeah.
That's right.
And I would be, I would have a duster with a cowboy hat. I would specialize in short range combat and sawed off shotguns.
Ooh. Wow.
And I would wear no shoes, no shirt, just a leather duster. And then, cut off jean shorts in my outfit.
Yeah.
Just because I'm used to living in the wilds on my own. Yeah.
Yeah.
Instead of a bandolier of grenades, you'd have a bandolier of Bush beers. From the Bush family of beers.
No, I was actually just going to say I would have 3,000 grenades on my person and never use them ever.
Yeah.
And at least once per episode, you'll have to say, you know, in the wild, you have to do, and then that would be the lesson of the episode. Is
there'd be a he'd say in the wild, and there'd be a sting in the background, or just going,
you hear the
or I would just be like, it looks like Cobra Commander wasn't the alpha.
Oh, Jesus. Man. Well, you're hired.
And the only time I would use a grenade is when I team up with TNT. And TNT lost his backpack, and I'd have to throw him a grenade.
Yeah,
explosive,
which is actually incredibly painful for you because you have a mental illness where you collect and hoard grenades.
Exactly,
and they've actually molded into your body. So when you pull one of them off, it's a part of actually tearing off your nipple or something.
They're all held down by different different headbands.
I've got nipple rings, except for it's like the ring. Grenade locked in there, yeah.
You're flesh.
Wolfman's hardcore. Man.
Wolfman is hardcore.
That is hardcore. But
I feel like the name needs work. Probably J.J. Yeah. would name it something like Timber.
Werewolf.
Oh, there we go. Timber is good. Yeah.
Yeah.
Or it's like wolf, but it's like an acronym. It's like...
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Weathered ordinance. life.
Lying fuckwad.
Fuckwad.
Is there not a G.I. Joe guy named Timber already? I feel like there probably is one.
Yeah, it seems a little perfect, right?
Yeah.
David?
I'd probably be the quartermaster. They could get you anything you needed, so I just deus ex machina, whatever specific part that is needed to resolve the episode's problem.
So, we already know that they starve to death.
No, I love this because David has seen this episode and he realizes that G.I. Joe's weakest point is logistics, so he's going to be a logistics man.
Yeah.
He's going to fix all their logistics.
Right.
And my costume is one of those trench coats that's filled with watches.
Nice.
But that's it. Nothing under the trench coat. So when you open the trench coat, you just just flash everybody, but you show them.
Yeah, but instead of watches, it's potable water.
like turkey legs you like to drink.
Okay, Timber was the name of Snake Eyes' wolf companion.
Oh, okay, there we go. So I would probably be like Maine
would be great.
How about Grimsley?
Spelled like the state.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm from Maine.
Yeah.
The character's background, he's from Maine.
He's a backwoods hick from Maine.
Hey, man, it's rough up there. Have you ever met anyone from Massachusetts?
Austin, Massachusetts?
Austin, Massachusetts.
I think I'm torn between either being the crouching masturbator G.I. Joe. who specializes in espionage and
his name is The Stranger.
Yeah, The Stranger. He's proficient with only one weapon, if you know what I mean.
It's the Billy Club.
Yeah, he doesn't know all your fancy NATO and Warsaw Pact small arms, but you can touch his small arm.
Now I like the idea of like him not really wanting people to touch him though. He's there to watch.
Yeah. Yeah, the voyeur.
Yeah.
I like The Stranger.
The Stranger.
The other one I wanted to be was The Wasp. Who is
the whitest guy?
He's like the upper crust part of the DGI Joe force. He doesn't.
Yes, really... Cobra's attacking again. Maybe we should send somebody to do something about
I'll sell some stock.
This...
That'll deal with it. He doesn't go on many combat missions. He tends to hang out at the headquarters with a martini.
He hangs out with logistics. David's character back at base.
Yeah. Me and David are just getting drinking.
Drinking.
Excellent booze you
find
here.
David's character can find.
Alcoholic beverages.
What do we call David's character? It can't be logistics man.
Yeah. What's your
Third Master?
Third Master. Yes, it makes no sense. Instead of Quartermaster, Third Master.
Third Master. Excellent booze you've procured here, Third Master. You keep it coming, I'll keep paying.
Is that Stranger over there in the corner? Oh, my.
Oh, wow.
He really does get on with himself, doesn't he? So you hear outside the tent.
I think though that the Wasp would probably like he would know Cobra Commander like personally.
Oh no, they went to Harvard together.
Yeah. He knows Destro and the Baroness. They were
roommates at Harvard.
Yeah. Oh yes. Oh yeah. I remember.
Oh, you mean Dusty? Yeah. Oh yes.
Terrible man. I could barely stand to be in the fraternity with him.
But he did give me my first internship.
Yeah.
It would be kind of great if they still hung out.
They don't talk about work. Yeah, no. They just go up to like the ski resort in the Swiss Alps.
Nice. I like this.
I like that.
I like this rich tapestry we're weaving for expanding the G.I. Joe universe.
Yeah. They need, you know, that's what they need, more characters.
Exactly. Yeah, more characters, more merchandising.
Merchandising.
What if we made 3.75-inch characters of ourselves in this G.I. Joe fashion that we've just made up? Can we get sued? That's the question.
You could always get sued.
Yeah. I think it's more likely we'll get sued for other things. Like, can you get sued for having a shitty podcast? I'll bet you can.
Yeah, you might be able to. Especially if we claim to be the best podcast on the internet, which we are. We are.
Yes.
Which internet are we talking about here?
The one spelled with a Q.
Oh, no. No Anon shit. Knock it off.
God, I hope not.
All right. So are we keeping this?
I vote yes.
Yeah.
I vote yes.
I vote yes.
Okay.
It's yeah. unanimous.
It's unanimous. And we need to keep
it's anonymous.
Need to keep Derek in the loose. So. Derek has to be in on this.
Yeah. Well, so. I think Derek will support this.
So when we re-roll it he in loves a minute racism. Here, like right now. Oh, Matt.
What?
Can't be saying shit like that about our dear friend Derek.
Yeah, especially behind his back. You're supposed to...
Especially since he's not here today to defend himself because he's at that rally.
Oh, shit.
David, did you just get that?
This is the first time today I've looked at the date.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, shit.
Yeah,
oh,
man.
We gotta cut that out. We gotta cut that out, kids. Not a...
For the, in case we keep any of this, for those at home, today we're recording this on the 6th of January. So.
A day which will live in infamy. Right?
Right? Yeah, as the day that Kevin McCarthy still can't get the fucking speaker locked down. Matt, you're going to have to redeem your credit.
Oh.
For today's presentation.
Oh, is it time for redemptions?
It is time for redemptions.
So I am divided. I will open it up. Here's what I'm thinking.
A Matt divided cannot stand.
No, he'd fall right down.
Split right down the center.
I'm thinking of bringing up to the main list either Battle of the Planets or Defenders of the Earth.
Hmm.
Both sound horrible. Do we know what either one of these is?
They are both American revamps of animes, I believe.
Hmm. I'm going to go for, just based off of dates alone, I'm going to go with Battle of the Planets.
Okay,
because I think that, like, yeah, 1978, I think that, like, older anime is, like, ridiculous, and I'd love to see it, so.
All right. David or Mike, do you have an opinion?
No.
Okay, Battle of the Planets it is. I'd like to move that on to the main list, please, David.
Okay, so let's go on to Reverse Retcon.
We want cartoons 26 hours a day!
Reverse Retcon!
Excellent. What are we watching in 4 weeks, probably?
Tell me, what is Index 2492?
Oh, shit.
Oh.
That's high up there. 24. Do we go up or down now?
It's the next highest number, which is further down on the spreadsheet.
So 2502 is going to be the next highest number, and that's Tailspin.
What?
1990 to 1991.
Wow.
G.I. Joe to Tailspin.
Yeah.
We are hitting the bigs.
We're hitting some. We're getting into the big time now. Yep.
I feel like I made a clause a long time ago that if we ever got Tailspin, we had to watch Porco Rosso.
I think you did say that. I do believe you did say that.
Well, do you want us to watch Porco Rosso or Son of the White Mare?
Oh, man. Son of the White Mare.
Would we be able to watch Porco Rosso before Tailspin also? That's the question.
Let's just have it in as optional.
Okay.
A strong recommend from me. Have you seen it?
I have not seen it.
Oh.
I know what it is, but I haven't seen it. So.
Oh.
There are 65 episodes in Tailspin, David, if you need that number for your ruling.
Yeah, just put that in. We're watching episode 59.
Whoa! Late in the series. In our supposed sweet spot where it's close enough that they see the end. And far enough in that they've run out of ideas.
Yeah, so. Yeah. Where they're really phoning it in.
Yeah, the point where they're just taking a knee for the last few episodes.
This is when they start doing the 2 to 3 hour lunches. Mm. Interesting that we got one with Louie in it.
Yeah.
Oh, he's in most of the episodes.
Really?
He's usually not attached.
Because he's the mechanic.
It does sound like he's attached the plot a bit more than he usually is.
Yeah, because usually he's like a side character. Because he's the mechanic, right?
I thought he owned the business.
No, but Lou owns the business.
Thought he owned the repair shop.
Maybe.
Well, we'll get into this in a few weeks.
Yeah, this is important.
This is future, basically, a terrible problem.
Yeah, fuck those guys. Yeah, you heard me, me.
Well, speaking of fucking over future Matt.
Oh, damn it.
I don't know what it is, but that dice are just hammering you.
Oh, yeah. Man. I've got Tasmania, Tailspin. I'm getting all the T's.
Get all the T's. Well, in all fairness, Mike does have Tiger Sharks at the very least, so.
Mm.
And we have determined that Mike has a lot of research he has to do for Tiger Sharks. Yeah. Right, Mike? So, you ready for that, Mike?
Yeah, we need a full report on both sharks and tigers.
And their crossbreeding preferences.
Yeah.
On a future episode of Amazingly Terrible, we'll be watching Tailspin. But next time on Amazingly Terrible, we'll be watching Tiger Sharks. Episode 1, Voyage to Water O. And it's going to be a Mike episode, so hold on to your fannies.
Yeah, get your fannies packed.
Fannies packed.
Yeah, let's go ahead and end it. My name's Adam.
I have been G.I. Wasp.
I've been TNT. Pow!
That's your catchphrase.
That's your catchphrase. And you don't even have like a laser gun or anything. You're all explosives.
It's all explosives, but they go pew.
Pew.
Then I'll amend mine and say, I have been Maine.
Hey, Maine. You want to buy David?
Yeah. David. I do want to buy a David.
I want a standard issued David.
Government issue.
Government issue David.
Government issue David, yeah.
The GID.
Oh.
I got the GID.
You got the GID.
You got the touch.
You got the power.
Amazingly Terrible is produced by David and Adam. Music by Josh Woodward. Send your email to monotonouslyterrific@amazinglyterrible.com.
Honestly, this idea came to me when I was going downstairs and I saw some M&Ms. And I was just like, well, it's in your mouth, not in your hands. And then that's where it came from. So you guys caught me as I was formulating.
I never heard that one sung. I always heard it as like it was claimed.
Yeah, it was close to your mouth, not in your hands.
I might have songified it at some point in my childhood.
I might have altered my own brainwaves to understand this on a level you never did.
Some call it the Mandela effect. I call it Tuesday. Much like what I do frequently, you could just be like, there's something gross here. Let me mention it to Matt. He'll fix it.